When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Roker Report Player Ratings podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. Gav back again once more after the win tonight against Port Vale, and I'm joined by Bomber and Malk. Bomber, how are you doing, mate? Enjoy that?
I'm alright. Well, I wouldn't say enjoy, but it's a result in a clean sheet, so I'll take it.
Yeah. Malk, how about you? How did you feel about that performance?
Yeah, I agree. It wasn't the best thing in the world, but there was patches of improvement and we got through without any major injuries and stuff like that. So take the good things when you get them, because we needed a win. That was the main thing, and we got one in 90 minutes-ish.
Yeah, it was a sort of a control and dominant performance without the goals, I would say, to go with it. We started brightly, I thought Dan Neil and Embleton in particular were brilliant, driving the ball from the middle and trying to get us forward quickly. That was the tempo early doors was really important. It's something you don't often see with Sunderland, in that when we do get on the ball, we sort of try and force the issue very quickly. And I think with two lads who are good on the ball, in Neil and Embleton, we did a good job of that from the start. And we got the goal in the first half through Aidan O'Brien, who I thought actually had a very decent game. The pass from Willin and Gooch was well played. I know there was a little bit of fortune involved in that. The Port Vale defender didn't read it properly and sort of mistimed his block, but it did go to where it intended, and O'Brien finished excellently. Then in the second half, it was probably a little bit quieter than we might have liked. I think that probably had a lot to do with Dan Neil going off, actually. He went off at half-time and Ledbetter came on, and although he didn't really put a foot wrong, we were just a lot slower on the ball. And then right at the death, when it looked like the game was over, another brilliant pass, this time from O'Brien, put Jack Diamond in on goal and the keeper wiped him out. Penalty kick, which McGeady scored just about. I think the keeper got a touch on it, but it went in. It's a clean sheet at home. It's a win at home, most importantly. We haven't won a lot at home. I think before tonight we hadn't won in six in our home games, which is not good. And although these aren't points on the board, it puts us through in the cup, and people will have their opinion on whether the EFL trophy is a worthwhile competition. Bomber, won't they? It's a win, and winning breeds confidence, and hopefully it gives us a bit of momentum going into the weekend, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like you said, it kind of breaks that duck of however many home games you said it was without a win. And like I said right at the top, a win is a win, and it's a clean sheet. It's not something that we've had too often more recently. So I think the other good thing is that it meant that we got to have a look at the likes of Neil and Embleton a bit more, and even, you know, Ollie Younger came on for what was it, 20 minutes or so. You know, we got to have a look at those players in an environment where, if we're being honest, the vast majority of people aren't really fussed about the result. It stands us in good stead. We should really have stopped the rot. That's the way I'm looking at it. We've stopped that rot in terms of our home results. Just carry that win and that clean sheet into the league games when it really matters, if we're being honest.
Yeah. So I threw it out there on Twitter just before we hit record, the three-word review from our Twitter followers, and I'll just quickly list through them. We've got 442 from Phil Butler, one of our writers. Cameron Johnson says scoring's a minimal. Nick says Neil deserves chance. Carl Bridgewood, more pizza trophy. Martin Wiggum says que sera sera. Robert Armstrong, boring to watch. Bit harsh. Jason Beattie says youngsters are key. Gary Johnson says sign a striker. Kieran Jennings again, que sera sera. SD Greens need Kevin Nisbet. Brian Bird need more goals. Terence Crombie, thoroughly deserved win. Gideon Gungeon says, how are the sheet? I think he's referring to the clean sheet there. Gaz K says, we need strikers. Adam Wilkinson, O'Brien over Wyke. Jordan Gowlin, please just shoot. And last but not least, YJ Lampton says, corner for Sunderland. That was sort of the the story of the game for me, Mal. I think we had something like 15 or 16 corners in the game. It's crazy, isn't it, how we're just so toothless from set pieces. I think during the commentary, actually, Danny Collins said, Frankie maybe asked, when was the last time we scored from a corner? And they were really racking their brains trying to think when the last time we did. There was a game against Aston Villa under-21s earlier in the season. Yeah, we scored a few. What can you put your finger on that at all? Like what's the crack? Is it poor delivery or what? I mean, it's obviously we must work on set pieces, Mal, mustn't we? So what's going on there?
Well, in my opinion, I agree we must work on set pieces, but we've got to bloody work harder because you can't have that many corners, and there was a few free kicks as well in dangerous positions for the opposition to deal with. And we're either not clearing the first man, we're not keeping them far away from the goalie. I mean, there were some proper bloopers in that Port Vale box tonight. There was one where the goalie tried to punch one clear and their defender headed it over the bar. If somebody is attacking them balls, then, you know, we've got to get the odd goal out of that. I mean, Aston Villa kids, where we got a few headed goals, bless them, you know. I know the under-21s are in this competition to help them develop and to bulk the competition out and that, but it was just men against boys. So I do think it needs to be work on the deliveries. I think we should stop changing the delivery person as well. You know, we've had everybody on that ball. Embleton, obviously Ledbetter, McGeady took a couple when he came on. It needs a lot of work because when we're not creating a lot, as we haven't been, you've got to convert them. You've got to get something out of them, and we're not nearly enough.
Yeah, I think that some of that comes down to the fact that, you know, we aren't unless we've got people like Tom Flanagan and Conor McLaughlin on the pitch, we aren't actually that big a team. You know, our midfield is generally small. Our strikers are generally small, with the exception of Charlie White, but, you know, he just seems to not be able to head a ball or finish or be any sort of threat in the air. Which really just leaves kind of Jordan Willis, certainly in today's lineup, only really left Jordan Willis as a threat aerially. But to just touch on what you were saying, Malk, about the different takers, I think that is a necessity because we don't seem to have anyone who can consistently place a ball in. So it looks like it's like, oh, well, that wasn't very good. Okay, well, you try the next one then. And then someone else has another go for a couple, doesn't work off, and then it's the next person in the line. So if they are working on it, it needs more work.
Yeah.
What do we think about the strikers tonight then? Because obviously, I think we went with two up front. O'Brien started up there with Lyndon Gooch. Lyndon Gooch was definitely playing centre forward. He wasn't wide. I think actually the pair of them work quite well together. Obviously, they combined for the first goal. And then O'Brien got himself an assist as well. Has he played himself into contention, Mal? I know as well, and we'll bring this into it as well. Charlie White came on and missed a sitter. And just generally looked like Charlie Wyke, didn't he? I mean, has O'Brien played himself into contention for the weekend, do you think? Or do you think Wyke starts against Wimbledon? Because I think a goal and assist is enough, surely, for O'Brien to knock on the manager's door, isn't it? Before that game, say, well, you've given us a chance and I've taken it tonight.
Well, he's got to be knocking on the door, absolutely. I mean, Wyke came on, I know it was only 20 minutes to go, maybe 25, including the injury time, but he missed an absolute couple of sitters. I mean, that header... if you go back to the game at the weekend, that header that he had, if that had been any other half-decent League One centre-forward, that would have been absolutely ripping a hole in the net. And he put it straight at the keeper's midriff, you know.
Can we just explore that further, that header? Because the ball, as you say, was a peach. It was an outstanding cross, right? Yeah. They slowed it down on the replay on the stream. Wyke standing in space.
It's a free header, man.
It's a free header. Not one Port Vale player around him. He's got all day to think about what he does with it, where he puts it, and he hits it straight at the keeper. I'm looking at him thinking, how has he missed that? I would have scored that. How has he got as many goals as he's got this season? Because he just misses so many stupid little chances like that, and I just think, we can't persist with him. We need a striker. I think one of the three-word reviews, majority, quite a lot of them touched on we need another striker. I mean, it We won't get promoted with him up front, Bomber, surely.
No, no. And I know he's got, well, he's double figures for the season, and people would defend that and say, well, you know, he's the only striker that's scoring. But, you know, that's not the be-all and end-all. You know, I'm with you. I'm astounded that he's got that many. I seem to come on here every time I'm on here and say something that he's pissed me off about. and, you know, he's not a League One striker. Or if he is a League One striker, he's not, you know, a top six striker in this league. And, he, you know, no team is going to get promoted if they're pinning their hopes on Charlie Wyke. And yes, okay, he pops up with the odd performance where, well, I say performance, he still, when he scores, he still doesn't necessarily give that performance. He just happens to be in a right place at the right time. But it's not often enough to be, you know, worthy of consideration when you're picking your starting lineup. To go back to, because we haven't really touched on your first question, Gav, about Aidan O'Brien. I mean, if ever there was, you know, an example of a confidence player, that was Aidan O'Brien tonight, because, you know, people had written him off, myself included, and a lot of people in our WhatsApp group had written him off not 2-3 games ago. And all of a sudden, he's got that goal, and it was a very well-taken goal. It's a good finish. And all of a sudden, he looked like a completely different player after scoring that goal. So I think I'd give him another chance, because I'm sick to the back teeth of talking about Charlie Wyke and how he should be doing better.
Yeah, I would agree. And just to close that question out, Gav, if you think about the amount of work that needed to be done for the opportunities that we had, yeah, O'Brien had loads to do. It needed a needle through, a needle accurate pass from Gooch to get the lad in, and then he had to score from a very difficult position. Wyke had to just point it at the goal and make sure the goalkeeper, who looked about 5'6", wasn't in the way. And then in the 90-odd minute, he had one that fell right in front of him 3 yards out, and he didn't have the quickness of feet to just tap it in. You know, he's got to get a shout for that. Yeah,
he took about 5 touches, didn't he?
Yeah, he's got to get a shout, and he's got an assist. When was the last time Charlie Wyke got an assist? He's got to get a goal. Whether he will or not, it just depends on how critical the manager, the coach, is going to be of tonight's performance. Another one.
Yeah, I wonder if that does count as an assist, actually, from O'Brien. It should do, because it was a brilliant pass. I know, obviously, it was a penalty, but for me, the pass made the goal, didn't it?
If we're talking about fancy football teams, then the assist would be for Diamond. It'd be Diamond with those three assist points.
well, on Roker Report, we're going to see O'Brien gets the assist. Okay, we'll move on to the player ratings then. I'll start off with Remy Matthews, probably the easiest mark to give this, because he done nout. He had nothing to do other than claim a couple of crosses and take some goal kicks. So he gets a 6 for me. That's the standard mark for doing nout. Nout wrong, even. Bomber, okay, McFadzean, that left-back. It feels like we're going to be seeing a lot of him going forward. I think Denver Hume is going to be out for a few more weeks, isn't he? So he needed to sort of prove his worth to me. And did he do that?
It was very similar to Saturday's game, actually, I thought, in that he didn't really do an awful lot wrong, but again, didn't really set the world on light. I still think, with regards to his crossing, that most of the time leaves a lot to be desired. But he gets in the right positions. You know, he seems a very similar type of left back to Denver Hume, in that he likes to get forward, like, and is comfortable on the ball, and can't cross very well. The only thing that he doesn't have that Denver has is his willingness and ability to kind of cut in and drive at a fullback or at a centre back in attacking positions. I mean, if we had to go with him for another 3-4 games, I wouldn't be disappointed. Today I gave him a 6 because, again, he didn't set the world alight, but equally didn't do anything wrong. So
I think some of his crossing was poor. There was one that I can think of where it didn't make any sense. There were two or three players committing in the box, and he sort of like side-footed it into the air towards the goalkeeper, and he knew himself it was crap because his head was in his hands. But I'm being picky, I guess. I don't think it's hard to judge sometimes these players when the other teams offered nothing going forward, because he didn't really have to defend. So I can't really argue against your mark. Billy Wright then, Mark. Billy Wright, how'd he do?
First off, I thought he was really, really strong. I gave him kind of a 6, 6.5 for the first half. You know, the defensive unit looked pretty much more solid in the first half, and I'm not too sure what things changed that made it look less so in the second half. In the second half, I gave him kind of a 5.5 and a 6. He was wasteful a couple of times. There's an argument that, you know, the two tackles that he did on the edge of box could have really got us in trouble if the opposition were a bit more clinical with their finishing. So on balance, I gave him a 6 because it's a clean sheet and I think he deserves that. But it wasn't the domineering performance from Bailey Wright that we often see, especially in the second half. And he needs to be looking over his shoulder with Willis around, Sanderson around, Flanagan will be coming back soon. You know, they are all going to need to step up to keep their places. But decent enough performance and 6 overall.
Yeah, he got himself booked, didn't he, for a daft foul where the man got the wrong side of him. And
he just got turned, didn't he? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It wasn't great.
Yeah, so I've maybe been a bit harsh on Wright, but I actually gave him a 4. I thought by his own standards he was
quite poor. What? We got a clean sheet?
Yeah, I know.
You're a hard man to please.
Possibly, but I am judging him by his own standards, in fairness. Yeah, yeah. And the yellow card was cheap. It was the second game in a row that he's got a cheap yellow card. His defensive positioning for that yellow card was absolutely piss poor, which is why he's pulled him down. He also, in that second half, had some very, very loose touches, and Josh Scoring got him out the crap on quite a few occasions. And hit, for me, too many long balls. And also in injury time, he ended up on his backside to let Port Vale in, and they almost, it was that chance they had on that far left-hand side. That came from him slipping over and ending up on his backside. So maybe I'm being hypercritical, but and it might seem stupid to give a player who's kept a clean sheet a 4, but like I say, by his own standards, I thought he was poor today.
Yeah.
Well, you made a compelling argument. Okay, my turn then. I'm going for Jordan Willis. I just gave him a 6. To be fair to Willis as well, he isn't fit. It's just so... I think when Lee Johnson talked the other day about the players who are struggling with the hernias, it might be Willis that's one of those, because he seems to just not really impact the game an awful lot before like sort of slowly falling out of the game, looking a little bit sluggish and having to come off. And I guess we haven't really learnt the extent of his injury problems, but it's plagued him all season. That said, he didn't do anything wrong, but Port Vale didn't really bother him too much. So that's another easy one for me, I think. So yeah, I give him a 6. I don't know if either of you disagree.
I think it was better than his previous recent attempts at coming back. He looked a bit stronger and a bit fitter and a bit firmer on the ball. Couple of good early hard tackles went in, but he did fade. You're not wrong. And you know, it's the ideal opportunity for people that are coming back from probably injury and dabbling with COVID-19 to see how he's doing. And I think he stepped up a little bit, but he's not back to how he was 18 months ago yet.
Yeah, we saw flashes of it, didn't we? Sometimes on the ball, and I don't know if that's just because Port Vale were relatively poor going forward, but he did look quite classy on the ball at times. For me, if he's 100% fit, he's still our best centre-half.
Yeah, he steps into the space well as well, doesn't he? You know, if there's a bit of a gap in front of him, he's not frightened to bring the ball forward and wait for them to apply pressure, which means you're not humping such a long ball. You know, you'd maybe playing through most, but it's a little bit of a step up, but he's still not there.
Yeah. Now for the League One Cafu, Max Power. Bomber. How did you mark him then? He's new position at right back there.
Yeah. So I gave him a 6. Maybe if we're doing half, Mark's a 6.5, because if you take into consideration that it is an unfamiliar position for him, all right, didn't have an awful lot to do defensively, which meant he could focus on getting forward. But he did actually get forward. There was a few kind of times that he overlapped on the right-hand side. He was picking the ball up in that kind of that right-hand corner a couple of times, was moving the ball, got a couple of crosses in, played a couple of square balls across the box. And, you know, for somebody who is filling in that position, I don't think you can ask much more, really. So, it's a 6. It's one of those, like we've said with a couple of the players so far, didn't do anything spectacular, but certainly didn't do anything wrong. And then all things considered, when he's out playing out of position, it's a decent performance.
Hmm. Josh Scowen, Malky played a little bit deeper than he normally does for the majority of the game. How do you feel about him?
Yeah, he was okay. There was times when he was very good with some of his driving runs and stuff like that, but then there was a couple of occasions he did those driving runs and having little 1-2 touches with people, and then the last pass would just be rubbish. On balance, I gave him a 5.5. I think he might shade a 6 on a good day. He did provide more in the midfield, I think, as you touched on, Gav, when we had Neil on, I think Scowan had a bit more go forward in him, because both Neil and Embleton were, you know, really having a go in the midfield, and I think that gave him a bit more freedom. Second half, he wasn't as good, but then I agree, I think Leadbitter kind of calmed things down, possibly with less of an attacking intent. He's somewhere between a 5.5 and a 6 for me. But a decent enough performance, but he wasn't the best of the midfield, and I think that's why he got what he got.
Yeah. So my turn now, Dan Neil. At half time, I wrote my scores down, and I gave him an 8 for the first half, not expecting him to come off. So I can only really go on the first half performance. I thought he was fantastic, if I'm honest. He moved the ball around quickly, effectively. Some of his diags were really good. You know, it looked as though you just wanted to get the ball forward very quickly, which is something you don't normally see from our central midfield players. And it was a perfect game for a player like Dan Neil, really, because Port Vale didn't really press us. They sat back. So he had all the time in the world to do what he wanted. And I hope he's not injured. I hope it's not serious, because he came off at the break. But yeah, I gave him an 8, and I think that's fair enough, if I'm honest. I think if we're given the likes of, you know, Scowan and that 6s and 7s, then Dan Neil was certainly a step up from that. So yeah, an 8 out of 10 for Dan Neil. Has anybody got anything to say on his performance? I mean, is he? Well, there's been rumours, hasn't there, that he could be off on loan to a League Two side. But when he plays in games, people are always impressed, aren't they? It's a funny one. I think he does need to be playing regularly, but at the same time, is he going to get games here in the league? I don't think so.
This is the thing. If on that performance and on the performances we've seen of him, if Lee Johnson can guarantee that Dan Neil will play 2 in every 3 games, then we keep him and he stays, and it'll be really, really good for us. If that's not the case, and I don't think it would be, I think at the moment there's too many senior professionals in that position who would be picked above him. So I think he needs to go, and he needs to get, you know, 20 games of first team football, you know, half a season of football under him. The one thing I would say about Neil, that I picked in kind of my notes, is that it was really refreshing to see a centre midfielder pick the ball up, play a forward pass, and then actually every time he played a forward pass, just surged forward looking for a 1-2, looking for the return ball. And when you watch Leadbitter and Power and Scowan play, they'll play that forward ball, but there's no urgency to then get forward and try and support that attack again. They're much more likely to ask for it back and come backwards. Whereas every time Neil got the ball, he'd play it forward into Embleton or into Gooch, and he'd immediately try and get beyond them to try and get that ball back. And I think that was for me, it was brilliant.
Embleton, then. Who's got Embleton? I think it's you, Bomber.
I think it's me, yeah.
What do you make of his performance?
So I actually marked him down a little bit. I thought he was quite wasteful. On the ball, I thought some of his decision making it was quite poor. His best bits were when he linked up with Neil on those 1-2s and those overlaps. But I felt that when he was kind of solely in charge of the ball, more often than not, he made the wrong decision. And again, maybe I was watching something slightly different or looking for something slightly different. Because the general consensus in kind of the WhatsApp group and stuff was that he played really well. But I found his kind of decision making in that, as that final ball or that final pass, to be the wrong one. He wasn't poor by any stretch, but as we're marking, you know, the likes of Scowan and Power 6, I probably I would give him a 6, but I'm going to stick to my guns and go with a 5, because I was disappointed with his final ball.
So I'm quite surprised, Bomber. I think you're having a bad evening tonight, and you're a bit of a bad mood. No, I thought Embleton in the first half especially was very, very good. He should have had a penalty in the first 5 minutes when he got bundled over in the corner of the box.
We haven't touched on that, actually. You're right. Yeah, he did. They showed it back slowly, and he got the player clattered him.
He did, and he was just inside the box. So he should have had a penalty. Him and Gooch did a lovely 1-2, but there was nobody bombing into the box to kind of convert it. He took a shot and it clipped the keeper and hit the bloody crossbar. And then, in the 40-odd minute, he did a lovely little run down the left side, 1-2, and smashed a left-footed drive, and it was about 3 foot over the bar. So I gave him a 7 in both halves, although the second half he was less significant than the first. But I didn't see a lot that Neil did. You know, you can't see everything that every player does, so I wouldn't have been as effusive about Dan Neil, but he did have a good half, the what he played. So.
Yeah, I actually gave Embleton an 8 for the first half and a 7 for the second. Okay. So I'm more on your lines, to be honest, Mark. But I think with Embleton, I sort of want to see him do well as well. So that maybe impacts the way I mark him. But there was just some of the little things that he does. Like there was one particular moment I remember where he burst into the box and he dribbled with both feet.
Yeah.
In that movement, he used his left, his right to chink either way. I like two-footed players, and it was just nice to see something a bit different, I guess, from a midfield player. But I do agree. I think in the second half he was quieter, but I don't think he had a bad game. I think he was, especially like you say, when Dan Neil was on the pitch, the whole team was better actually, and maybe Hamilton suffered a little bit from him going off.
Yeah, I think maybe that's where kind of my comparison is that anything, particularly those link-ups where Neil and Embleton were linking up, I attributed those to Neil because it was Neil, generally speaking, he was making that second run to go and receive the ball back, and rather than perhaps appreciate the pass from Embleton back to him, as just kind of credited that with Neil. I'm not saying that Embleton was poor by any stretch of the imagination, but I just, for, you know, certain incidents and stuff stay in your mind, don't they? And that's what you end up making your judgments on.
Yeah, fair dues.
Yeah. Next up is Chris Maguire, Malk.
Another game of two halves. I thought in the first half he was quite hungry. He was turning people and running into space and having a bit of a go. You know, he had that shot that the goalie kind of fluffed over the corner, which, you know, I was wishing that was Diamond, because that was the same position Diamond curled that little left footer into the top corner from. I think he's another one of these players who's still coming back to full fitness, possibly from injury, possibly from having a manky chest from this bug. Second half, nowhere near as effective, really quiet. And I think it was a good idea that he went off on the 72nd, 73rd minute, whatever it was, when they brought the three subs on, McGeady, Wake and Younger. I gave him a 5 for the second half, but a 7 for the first, so I'd probably split the middle and go 6. Again, a step up as per Jordan Willis, but still not himself.
We'll rattle through the rest of these then. Lyndon Gucha gave an 8 in this first half and a 7 in the second, just because he was a little bit quieter. Again, Gooch just very busy. It was nice to see him play through the middle. I think that's probably his favourite position, isn't it? He done a podcast with the club a few months ago where he mentioned that he likes to play through the middle. So generally you're going to see probably a little bit more from him when he does get the chance to play there. I wouldn't say it was an accomplished performance from Gooch, but he definitely did well. And like I say, his pass for the goal was superb, I thought. Very well weighted, and O'Brien pretty much just had to lash the ball, didn't he? So, I give Gucci 7 for his whole performance. But I was happy to see him play, to be fair. He hasn't featured an awful lot from the start again since Johnson came in. Last of the starters, Bomber, is Aidan O'Brien, who we've already spoke quite a lot about.
Yeah. So I won't go into too much detail because, like you said, we have spoken about him quite a bit. I gave him an 8 overall. I think last part of that second half, he kind of faded out. I know his work was done. I think that in that first half in particular, like I said, that goal seemed to do him a world of good. It was a good finish. It was good movement. And he had some nice footwork in and around the box. He played some nice little intricate passes in and around the box. I think he was obviously one of the standouts. So for me, he's kind of 7.5, 8. And, you know, a strong case for man of the match, I think.
Yeah. I just closing that out, sorry, Gav, the one thing I will say, in my opinion, and you can shoot me down if you disagree, I think both Gooch and O'Brien, even though neither of them's half the size of Charlie Wake, held the ball up and controlled it better in the attacking third.
Yeah,
you know, and a big lummox like that should not have that problem. It's the other reason why I think he's going to maybe get rotated out this weekend, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, I'll let you mark him then, Charlie Wake. What do you reckon, Mark? He wasn't on long, but he left a bit of an impression on us, at least.
Well, he missed that header. he couldn't kind of get his feet in place to tap in on the 94th minute or whatever it was. He did a few okay things. You know, there's a little bit of hold-up play out wide. But for the time he was on, I gave him a 5 maximum. And he's you know, he must be looking over his shoulder, especially with what we've seen last weekend and tonight.
I think he will be today, after today. I think before that, I think he probably felt his position was quite safe, especially with Will Grigg getting injured. And the others not really having a look in. But I think after today, it'll either give him a kick at the backside or it'll certainly have him looking over his shoulder.
Yeah. The other thing with Wyk, and obviously I listened to the podcast you did at the weekend, and Chris sort of asked what's the scale when it comes to Charlie Wyk. Like, does he get a mark for putting his boots on, for running a bit? Like, it was one of those type of performances. He came on for 20 minutes, and the couple of things he had to do, he didn't do right. So it's difficult to score him. He's a striker, and he needs to be putting chances away when he gets them. So I think you've been fair there, Malk. I'll rattle off the rest of them. We'll just get through the rest of these. Younger, I've given a 6-2. He didn't do a great deal other than clatter their striker, Tom Pope, who particularly like. He's a bit of a gobshite, so I was glad to see that. McGeady, I thought, was great, actually. I gave him an 8. I think his ball for Wyk should have been an assist, and he took his penalty and scored it. So you can't ask much more than that, really. Leadbitter, I gave a 6-2. I actually think he slowed the game down without playing particularly poorly, which actually prevented us from being sort of turning the screw and getting more goals. And maybe that's something for Johnson to look at. Like, when Leadbitter's starting games, we're not winning enough. Is it the fact he's so influential and slows us down so much that we're struggling to beat poor teams? You know, that's really something to maybe ponder on after this game, because as we saw in the first half with Dan Neil playing in his position, we were a lot better and we were playing a crap team. But Port Vale set up in a way that most teams set up when they come to the stadium alight. They just sat behind the ball. So it is something to ponder on. And lastly, I gave Diamond a 7. His run for the penalty decision was fantastic. Proper centre-forward play, actually, even though he's not a centre-forward. He was sort of on the shoulder of the last man, bursting into the box, and he did some good stuff out wide. Does anybody disagree with anything I've said there? Is there anything you would sort of like to add? Because I think, it was an interesting... So, for once, the subs, we actually had something to talk about, didn't we?
Yeah. Not always positively. If we're talking about Wyk, not always positively. But it's an interesting point that you made about Leadbitter, Gav, because he did slow the ball down, which meant that we didn't get it forward as quickly, which meant it was more difficult to break down Port Vale because they were sitting deeper and happy to contain. And so it is an interesting thing, is to, you know, whether you only play Leadbitter or you only start Leadbitter in the games against the top sides where you want to control possession and control the tempo a little bit more. It is a good argument.
Or bring him in when we're 3-0 up and we just want to, you know, absorb settle the down. Pressure and hit on the break. I don't disagree with any of them. Marks, Gav, Diamond was great. McGeady, I mean, what a turnaround, since Parky put him in the under-23s and told him to train in the car park. You know, the bloke's got his hunger back. I agree, 99 of them crosses out of 100 would have been 99 goals. For the one that Wyk didn't put away. It's good that we've got some attacking options. You know, subs have come on and made a positive difference, apart from, as we've said, Leadbitter coming on, but that was more forced through, hopefully, a precautionary withdrawal of a lad who took a bit of a knock. So,
yeah. Man the match, then? I've given it to O'Brien.
Yep.
Yeah, you agree?
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, we were talking on the WhatsApp chat before the game about, you know, is this going to be one of his last chances? And a lot of people think it possibly was, and he's definitely stepped up. So, yeah, man of the match for me as well, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the main thing. He's given the manager something to think about, hasn't he? He could well start at the weekend because he's played so well. It wasn't a complete performance, but he scored. I would say, the second goal came as a result of his brilliant pass. And just all around, his play was good. Like, I thought he was busy. He sometimes you need your striker to go looking for the ball, and you need him to create his own chances. And I'm not saying that it was that O'Brien did all of that to an acceptable standard. Some of his play wasn't great, but it was just nice to see the man leading the line do something instead of just standing there waiting for the ball.
Yeah, he did the basics, the fundamentals very well. He wasn't necessarily flashy. He wasn't like, didn't have massive amounts of flair. But in terms of the fundamentals that you expect from someone playing in that position, he did those very well, I thought.
Yeah, there was one bit around about the 58th, 59th minute. He killed a long crossfield ball to the edge of the box and brought it round, and he passed it to Gooch when Embleton was in yards and yards of space. So, I mean, Gooch ended up putting it wide for a corner. But, you know, if he's doing things like that, as you say, Bomber, on top of the basics, let's give him another shout. And if he doesn't keep doing it, then, you know, there's an argument to rotate them back out, but he's given himself a chance.
Yeah, so we look forward to Wimbledon at the weekend. There'll be another podcast before, obviously, the game, then we'll be back with the player ratings after that. So, yeah, thanks, everyone, for listening. Don't forget, we're running a charity fundraiser this month, as Bomber touched on in the last podcast, for Calm Zone, where there's about 15 of us running, walking, cycling, trying to get to Wembley and back. I think it's over 1,000 miles we've got to do in January. So that information's up on the website. You can find the link to the GoFundMe page if you'd like to give some money, and obviously on the Twitter page. Other than that, yeah, we'll see you back at the weekend, hopefully, with 3 points to talk about. And yeah, thanks very much for listening. Over and out.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.